Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony. It is Friday, August the 12th, 2016. It is just Rachel and I flying, well, not solo because there's two of us, flying duo tonight.
Yeah.
Brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for Gen Xers and millennials and the like. And what do we got going on in the world tonight, Rachel?
Well, I am here to ruin all of your fun. That's what I do. That's what I do. According to Dana, is you think that's fun? Let me tell you why it's not. The Olympics are happening. Yay!
Wait, how's that ruining our fun?
Well,
we like the Olympics.
We love the Olympics. They're so fun.
Sometimes we even watch a little bit of it.
Yeah, they're super fun, right? Everyone can just have a good time and not feel sad. Till I get involved. So we've been kicking ass and taking names, the U.S. team, in a bunch of different sports.
Not women's soccer today, though. They actually got eliminated by Sweden, and it was a big upset.
Oh.
And people are kind of...
I also heard Brazil, like, almost didn't do very well, and people were just going to lose their minds because that was supposed to be, like, that's their sport.
Yeah, but that was the men's team. This is the women's team. The men's team, you have to be under 23. It's a whole weird thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the U.S. has been doing exceptionally well in a couple of different sports.
We have. Way better than, I think, last time.
Yeah. Well, in some cases, the same, but and most better. and unfortunately, the media coverage of our wins has been garbage, particularly relating to women and particularly women of color who have been winning a lot of gold medals the last couple of days.
In sports that they don't usually even participate in.
Right. So, for example, women's gymnastics is something that I have been following for a long time. And the last Olympics in London, Gabby Douglas, who is a young African-American woman, took a couple of gold medals, which was pretty historic for Team USA. She's an exceptional athlete, and coming right before her, she was just a little bit too young to compete in the 2012 Olympics with Simone Biles. And I had watched her up and coming for a couple years, and we all kind of knew she was going to do something great. And boy, did she do something great. She's widely regarded as the most talented gymnast in the world and possibly in history. She's just exceptional. She actually has a floor move named after her called the Biles, which I will not bore you with the details of, but basically it's this crazy flip thing where she lands blind and it's just insane. No one's ever done it. And so she won. She helped the team win the team all around, which we got the gold for, which was tremendous. It's also, just as a side note, one of the more diverse U.S. Olympic gymnastics teams ever.
Yeah.
It's Simone Biles and Gabby Douglas, both of whom are black women, and Allie Raisman, who is I can't remember exactly, and then this Puerto Rican girl who keeps winking at the camera and everyone is just falling in love with her. She's very young. And then like one white chick. So it's kind of amazing.
It's usually all white chicks.
It usually is all white chicks. And the coverage of it has been pretty bad.
Well, I'm at work while most of this is on TV, but I'm hearing a lot of the best events aren't being covered live or only streaming, or they're not covering it properly, or they're getting information wrong. So you're probably a little more studied up on some of this controversy than I am.
So I am also at work when these things are happening, but I'm also a fan of women's gymnastics. And so there's a couple of things. The first one that I'm going to talk about is the most recent that I know about, which is this woman named Simone Manuel, another Simone, won an Olympic gold medal in swimming, which is again one of those things. That's the first African-American woman who's ever won a gold medal in swimming in the Olympics.
Yeah.
Ever. So that's really tremendous. And we're going to talk about that for a minute, in a minute. But one of the headlines that came out about this from the Mercury News was Michael Phelps shares historic night with African American.
Doesn't have a name?
She doesn't have a name. Her accomplishment is not worthy itself of its own headline. What was the sport that she won in? What the historical context of her win doesn't seem to matter. What matters is that they feel kind of a sad for Michael Phelps that he has to share today in his 22nd Olympic gold medal with an, quote, African-American. Doesn't say that she's a woman, doesn't say her name, doesn't say the sport that she, like, the actual thing that she won.
That's atrocious. Was that CBS?
No, it was San Antonio Mercury News.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the internet exploded.
As they should.
Even a guy who works there tweeted a thing that was like, that's just a terrible headline. Like, it's my paper and I might get in trouble, but that was atrocious. Yeah, it was really awful. It was really awful. So her name is Simone Manuel and she won. And there's this beautiful picture of her where she like doesn't realize that she won. And mm-hmm. then she also won, broke a record for this by like 0.2 something seconds, how that works, you know, because it's like such tiny little
Americans are breaking a lot of records.
Yeah. So,
and we're not even doping, probably.
Likely. They came out later and apologized and said, we apologize for an insensitive headline earlier on a story about Simone Manuel and Michael Phelps medal wins.
They
updated it and said, Stanford, Simone Manuel, and Michael Phelps make history. Again, we don't need to have Michael Phelps involved in her story. We can have two separate stories.
We can
have two stories. Yeah. Oh my God, it's amazing.
They can even share the front page if you want. But here's the thing. I lived in San Antonio 4 years. I don't remember San Antonio Mercury News at all. I don't think I ever read them once. I think I remember the San Antonio Express, I want to say. And then there was like the local sort of New Times kind of paper that was always like reporting on the stuff I cared about, like local music and art and what have you. So I don't even know about this paper.
Right. Okay. So it doesn't matter much, but still, this is worth mentioning. One of like many headlines that have come out recently.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go on to those though, I want to talk a little bit about not only, is it significant that so many, women of color are competing and winning at the Olympics in sports that they traditionally don't do that in,
mm-hmm.
but specifically about swimming, because we have a long history in this country of racism and pools.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stereotypes that you may be aware of about black people don't know how to swim or, you know, they're allergic to water. And there's this whole sort of like gross stereotype about black people and pools and swimming.
And I think it was, I want to say 8 or 12 years ago, one of the only black guys to compete or get to the medal round. And I don't even know if he was, I don't think he was American. He was in one of the swimming competitions and finished like dead last. And it launched all these horrible racist memes and stories. And I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the year. I'm forgetting the guy. I'm being a horrible reporter of that story. But I remember that it was like, you know, all the people come, oh, see, that goes to show the stereotypes are right with the black people who can't swim.
Right. So I'm just going to read a couple of statistics and then we're going to talk a little bit about the history and then we can move on. But the Centers for Disease Control found in 2014 that black children between the age of 5 and 20 drown in swimming pools at a rate greater than 5 times that of white children and teens.
Mm-hmm.
There was a story in Shreveport, Louisiana, a couple of years ago when 6 black teenagers drowned in a river trying to save another with them who slipped into the water. 70% of black teenagers and 60% of Hispanic teenagers can't swim.
Let me interject for just a second.
Yeah.
Because I very vividly remember living in Miami where we have the ocean and everybody's got a pool. I mean, in the middle upper class.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, and there's a million community pools and summer camp. We go to the pool every other day.
It's fucking hot all the time. So there's pools everywhere.
My mom, who is absolutely terrified of my sister and I dying in 800 different ways, was very much convinced that we'd probably drown one day. So like at the moment we were old enough, she gave us swimming lessons.
Yes.
Well, she didn't give us swimming. She paid for professional swimming lessons.
Yeah.
For like 2 years, I remember getting swimming lessons.
Yeah.
I mean, there was just no doubt about it. Now we were middle class and my parents could afford that.
Right. So I have the same story. My mom's best friend growing up watched her brother drowned in a river when he was like five.
Yeah.
My mom's best friend still to this day doesn't swim.
Right. And to that end, every other day, some kid was getting into a pool and drowning in Miami.
Right. And see, in Colorado, we didn't have that problem.
Right.
But my mom is a swimmer and she raised us to be swimmers. So mm-hmm. all three of us, myself and my two brothers, took swimming lessons. I took it farther. I'm a swimmer. So I took competitive swimming. My favorite was the breaststroke. Mm-hmm. And then I did synchronized swimming and then I did diving. So swimming is kind of a thing for me. I love it.
Yeah.
And that's thanks to my mom. Again, she could afford it. So I think there's two things going on. One of them that we've talked about for a long time is access. So because a lot of people in the Black community live in urban centers and often poor urban centers, mm-hmm. there's not a lot of access to public pools or private pools, as you would point out, like there was in Miami. And
they're probably not getting swimming lessons.
Right. The other thing, though, is what we're going to talk about, which is the racism and Jim Crow about swimming pools and swimming and black people.
I don't know why. Like, racist white people freak out about a lot of stupid shit.
Yes.
Swimming pools I've never quite understood, but this has been a big deal. I mean, I think I retweeted just a couple months ago a picture from the 60s of a newly integrated pool and a guy dumping acid in the pool.
Yes. Like, we're going to get to that in a second.
Yeah,
exactly right. Yeah. So there was this notion back in the day that the melanin from black people's skin could wash off in the pool and would infect whites nearby.
I hate to laugh. It's just, racist white America has all these stupid ideas that I can't help but laugh at the utter stupidity of it.
Just unbelievable. The other part of that, the other key to that was this sort of sexualization of black men as predators who just couldn't help themselves, and if they were allowed into a pool area with scantily clad white ladies,
they wouldn't be able to control themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And so this sort of culmination of things led to this really, even past when a lot of the civil rights and integration stuff was happening, segregation of public pools. And so for example, in 1948, Strom Thurmond said, quote, "I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that there's not enough troops in the army to force the Southern people to break down segregation and admit the nigger race into our theaters, into our swimming pools, into our homes, and into our churches." Homes, churches, but swimming pools had to be put in there because that was such a point of concern and hysteria.
Of course, that didn't stop Strom Thurmond from illegitimately fathering mixed race children.
Yes. As you were saying earlier, there's a photo in the mid 1960s of a motel manager in Florida pretending to dump acid into the property's pool as black occupants took advantage of newly passed public accommodation laws.
Right.
This is the mid 60s.
Yeah.
Okay. My parents were teenagers. So there's this woman, Dorothy Dandridge, who is an actress. And she is famous for lots of things, but one of the things that she's famous for is that she was staying at a hotel when she was doing some acting work, and I'm going to get the exact details because it's just horrific. She wasn't allowed to swim in the hotel swimming pool where she was staying,
mm-hmm.
and she was pissed, so she was walking by it and flicked her foot into the pool and sort of kicked the water up to be like, fuck you, basically.
Yeah.
They drained the entire pool and had people come scrub it with bleach and then refill it because a black person stuck their toe in the pool. So this erasure of Simone Manuel as the first black woman to win an Olympic gold medal is really more historic than just linking her in with Michael Phelps and not saying her name. It's a complete erasure of the history of racism and segregation and black people in public pools.
Yeah.
That the media, maybe they don't know, maybe they don't care. But
I'm sure the headline writer at the San Antonio Mercury Press wasn't thinking.
Right.
But probably should be in that position the point.
But should be. Because it matters.
Yeah.
And there is a history. And people don't necessarily have to know it, but maybe you should think about it. Maybe you should look it up I'm about to read some more things which are sexist. I just wanted to point that out to anybody who may not have known that. And I certainly had to do some research to find all those things out. But it matters more than just they didn't mention her name. It's historic in a lot of other ways, too.
Just to step back for a second.
Yeah.
it's easy for us to say, but there is a modicum of sort of perverse delight at what an awful time it is on the whole for racist white men's activists, Gamergator, alt-right,
yep.
Fedora, anti-Semitic frog guys. We had 8 years of a black dude as president. We're going to have a lady as a president. There's black women winning swimming competitions in the Olympics. They made it all-girl Ghostbusters, which, granted, might not be a great movie, but
<Don't care>.
We have the lead of the new protagonist of the new generation of awesome Star Wars movies is a lady.
And her...
There's just the braids are exploding.
And her co-protagonist is a black dude, and they literally...
They can't handle it.
And that is where some of this black backlash is coming from.
Absolutely. Of course it is.
You know, they just, it's like, wait, what happened? What, all of a sudden the world isn't mine anymore? That's so fucking unfair.
Nah, yeah. Mm-hmm. How dare they occupy the space of hegemony pop culture and political power and all the things.
Yeah, it's where you
just
get Trump.
It just, yeah.
It's where you get Trump.
Yeah, it's why Trump gets nominated to one of the major political parties.
Uh-huh.
And
why, when you look at his press conferences, it's a sea of, what did you call it, a sea of fat white people?
Well, that was in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Yeah. And it was a sea of chunky, pasty white people. And, you know, it's funny because most places they stick a couple black people,
some kind of people of color back there somewhere.
A Sikh or something.
Yeah.
You know, just for the images. And like, they just couldn't find any in Altoona. Or Trump probably just didn't even care anymore.
We're going to talk about that in a minute. But,
yeah, we're gonna get to...
So I'm going to talk about some of the sexism, because that's been really kind of like the mind-blowing.
Well, it almost always goes together, doesn't it?
Yes.
The racism and the sexism. Correct. This is why Leslie Jones became sort of the perfect target.
Right.
She's a woman, and she's black, and she's in this domain where it's just supposed to be the white guys.
I heard a term that I'd never heard before today that was called misogynoir. And it's specifically the hatred of black women. Mm-hmm. And black women is a different hatred than we talk about in sexism, which is why intersectionalism is so important. But black feminism is different than feminism.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's important to note that. And white ladies out there, shut up and listen.
Yeah.
Because it is an entirely different monster than the feminism that I talk about as a white lady.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so this is an article that I'm not going to read, but I'm going to talk about some of the points in it, written by a white dude named Lee. I think he does a great job for the most part, but we'll get to the parts where he doesn't. So he's talking about the sexism that has been happening in Rio.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts it out by saying, some of the media coverage from the 2016 games is proving that sexism is lamentably still a thing.
Okay.
Thanks, Lee.
Yeah.
We didn't know until Rio that sexism is a thing. Thanks. But I digress. So the first kind of incident that everyone took note of was NBC sportscaster Dan Hicks credited this Hungarian swimmer, her win, to her husband Shane. As she won, the cameras panned over to her husband, and he said literally, "And there's the man responsible." So as though...
Yeah.
Okay, he's her coach. Great. Yeah. So he is responsible for her winning. So she's not responsible for her own gold medal at this point. We do not speak this way about male athletes. We do not speak this way about them. We say, what a tremendous athlete. How great. Oh, there's his coach. Blah, blah, blah.
Maybe their wife will be in the stands or on the sideline cheering them on. Uh-huh. And don't they look so beautiful? And
doesn't he have such a lovely wife and children, and she inspires him? She's not responsible for his fucking gold medal, though.
No.
No one would ever say that. Nor do even they give the coaches of male athletes credit. They say, like,
sometimes
they have a really great coaching
sometimes
thing.
It depends.
Blah blah blah. Okay, so then,
but I your point is very well founded.
Right,
absolutely.
He Twitter just, I mean, murdered his face basically, and he came out and said, "It is impossible to tell Katinka's story accurately without giving appropriate credit to Shane, and that's all I was trying to do." Cool. No, it's not impossible. All you can say is all of the work that she put in, the hours and hours and hours and hours of training and hard work and sweat and broken bones and muscle tears and all the things she went through to get her to where she is. That's the credit.
And you can mention the coach.
Absolutely. But you do not, as she's winning, not mention her and say, and there's the man who's responsible. Like, that is out of bounds.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, Corey Cogdell won a bronze medal for trap shooting.
Mm-hmm.
The tweet of the Chicago Tribune was as follows. Wife of a Bears lineman wins a bronze medal today in Rio Olympics.
I heard about that.
They don't say the name of the woman who won, the event in which she won, or anything else about her. They just want you to know some dude's wife won a medal today.
And you know, I get it because it's a Chicago paper and everybody knows the Bears. And you can stick that in at the end. You say her name, mm-hmm. what she won. Oh, and by the way, she happens to be the wife of right. this guy you've heard of.
Which we're going to talk about in a minute right. because Lee doesn't disappoint at the end. So the problem, as Jezebel pointed out, was that it's not just the headline. The story goes on later on a tangent about her husband, talking about how he was the defensive end in his second season and was unable to get away from training camp. They basically spent more of the article talking about her husband than the fact that she just won a bronze medal in the Olympics. And so,
and she lives in Chicago too, right?
Yes.
Like, it might be one thing if she lived in Sweden and she had no real connection to Chicago except for this guy.
No.
But
no,
yeah,
no. Didn't mention the Olympian who just won a medal for the U.S.'s name
that's crazy.
Or sport in the article. He couldn't even be in Rio. It's not like they could even pan over to him and be like, by the way, that guy plays for the Bears. He wasn't even there, and they couldn't help themselves but to just be like, oh my God, do you know her husband's like famous and shit? Like, I don't give a shit. This is not about fucking football right now. This is about a woman who just won a bronze medal for the U.S. in trap shooting. That's what this is about.
Yeah,
that's the story.
I could let that go if that was a side story. Like, yeah. There was a story about her. Oh, and by the way, we sat down and interviewed her husband, who happens to be a Bears lineman,
right.
whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
So exactly. This is exactly the point Lee makes at the end. Some people defended the newspaper for simply trying to localize the story. Without the Bears connection, some argue, the Tribune probably wouldn't have covered Cogdell's achievement at the Olympics. And then they post a tweet that says, it's the Chicago Tribune, localized news to your audience, #journalism101. And I love that because Lee, the white dude who wrote this article, and I commend him for writing it, I think that it needed to be written, lots of people mm-hmm. have written it, still did that thing at the end though, where he's like going to give the other side. Because there's two sides to sexism. The side that is pointing out sexism and the side that is saying, also other people didn't think it was sexist. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't care. That doesn't matter. I don't care. I don't need that to be part of my news story. I don't need part of my news story to be about how some people made maybe a point about, no, it's a story about sexism. Just leave the people that disagree out of it.
You know, that leads.
We don't do racism yeah. and say, also some KKK members disagree. We don't do that.
Sometimes they do though.
They don't though.
Well, no, not literally. But
no.
What I was going to say was that's an interesting lead in to, I think journos are having a real hard time trying to cover the Trump campaign in the traditional presidential race coverage where the both sides and the generic
right.
red America and blue America, because this guy's not a normal candidate in any sense
right.
of the word. And they're trying to make these both sides connections that
yeah.
just aren't there.
Yeah, I agree. The one thing I was going to say that I don't know that we ever got to was this directly relates to politics, in that when Hillary Clinton won the nomination,
yeah, I was thinking
there was
of
like
that
four
too.
Or five papers that the next day had Clinton wins historic nomination
and, it was
and
just
a picture of Bill Clinton. And you're like, oh, I didn't know Bill Clinton could win the nomination again. Thanks, guys.
Yeah,
they literally showed a picture
the Constitution.
Of her husband giving a speech, even though she also gave. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And so that's what it reminded me of. But getting back to Trump, yes, I completely agree with just the level of insanity of the shit he's been saying lately. The media is like, I don't know, man.
I'm starting to just tune it out, though. But I understand why they're doing it. It's that they took Journalism 101.
Yeah.
And Journalism 101 says you've got to present both sides.
Don't be biased.
But it's not anywhere close to being...
The other side is what?
Parallel?
I mean...
I discount it now. There's an article about all the crazy shit Trump said today, because it's every day now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Trump
at least once a day.
Trump ate a baby and yelled the N-word and, you know, wiggled his dick at the crowd. But But boy, that email thing is still really haunting the Clinton campaign. It's like literally that's kind of what you're reading.
And, yeah, it is.
And I'm just starting to tune that out now and not care because I get it. I know what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I know you don't want to disappoint your, Journo 101 professor at Cornell or whatever.
I mean,
but it's not really the world we're living in right now.
Right. And even NPR was struggling with this today. They were talking about the five insane things that Trump said that would have disqualified anyone else in any other campaign in history at this point, and then said, and gosh, all of that really overshadowed this new leak of emails that came out about the Clinton Foundation and the state of the Department of State. And
which really didn't say anything.
Department of State, my brain. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm sick. I'm a little bit like loopy, but
which those email leaks really weren't very interesting at all.
No. And then they did a story about them and they had this very nice man come on and talk about it. And he was like, it's a little fuzzy in certain cases, but really there's nothing to point to that's any kind of thing that would really matter.
Yeah.
And they kept pushing him to be like, but isn't it a little, you know?
But it's going to be controversial.
He's like,
well, you could read it that way.
I mean,
way,
it's like staffers talking to staffers, and some of them have worked in both organizations. So I guess if you want it, you could say maybe. But he's like, when you really read it, like,
there's no proof of any wrongdoing. There's not even anything close
and they're
to.
Like, but we just spent 40 minutes talking about how fucking crazy Trump is. Tell me there's something wrong with Hillary. And the guy's like, yeah, no, it's not that big. I don't see it.
Yeah.
And they're like, but and it's like, no, guys, every time is not that.
Yeah, but this, and that's what they're struggling with, right?
Yeah.
It's that, but Journalism 101 says we have to do this. We got to present the other side. We got to be balanced.
No, there's no, no, you don't.
No.
Not when one person
When Trump says Obama's the founder of ISIS, there's no but Hillary something email.
Had a staffer talk to another staffer. Should we talk about that? It is outrageous. Well, it's not, because you just said that Trump said that Obama was the founder of ISIS. So you really don't need to be giving equal news space to those two stories.
They have to try. And I guess hats off to them for trying.
I don't think so. I think get over it. Hillary's not Trump. We all know that. You spend most of your time saying that to us.
And if one candidate is doing and saying things that are unprecedented and crazy, you're allowed to report that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because it is.
It is. Unprecedented and crazy.
And so they're trying, they're sort of trying to do both. They're trying to say, wow, Trump really did say something crazy. We've got to report how crazy that is.
And they do really well.
But,
and then,
but we still have to try to sort of do the both sides thing.
And then like, well, something did kind of happen with Hillary this week. Let's try to equate the two so that we don't seem like we're MSNBC or Fox for NPR,
right?
They're trying to be like, okay, we do have to report on the Hillary thing.
Well,
MSNBC. Seems like very small news at this point, but like, let's try to make it a big
even MSNBC. I mean, that's why they have Andrea Mitchell and Mark Halperin on every day, because they despise Hillary Clinton more than anything in the world, and they're going to, you know, blow up whatever controversy they think might hurt her. And,
Right.
So, you know.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's so frustrating, though. Like,
It can be, but in the end, it doesn't really matter. And you get what they're doing and what they're trying to do. And they're trying to keep up appearances of impartiality. And, you know, I they don't believe it.
Right.
When they go out to the bars after they're saying, Jesus, this Trump shit is crazy.
No.
I don't know how to report it.
Right. Even when they're reporting on Trump. And they bring these people in to experts in the field, sort of impartial. They try to bring in impartial experts, not just like, you know, his campaign advisor, like that awful woman. these are like, you know, oh, the chair of economics at fucking whatever. And they're or like national
says
security
Trump,
advisor.
Trump doesn't
blah,
have
blah, blah,
an
blah.
Economic plan.
And they're like, no, he's completely off the hinge, unrailed, dangerous. This is all bullshit. Everything he says is a lie. And they're like, all right, but if you were to say, is there a way to make you not say it like that so that we sound like we're being impartial? And they're like, no, there is no way to say it like that because he's a goddamn nightmare. And you're like, they're like, all right, we're no longer an impartial news source. And I'm like, no, you are. You literally asked an impartial expert what they thought, and they told you in no uncertain terms that this is a crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
This is not Hillary's campaign manager. This is someone who specializes in either, you know, foreign affairs or military or economics, saying this person is dangerous, and they're not willing to mince words because it's the truth. You have to report that, and you have to stop trying to make people be impartial about the truth. Like, just tell me what's going on. So it's, I've watched them juggle it, and I feel bad for them, but I also think they need to just realize that this isn't that kind of campaign.
Well, that's also crazy the way he's moved the goalposts so far that it's like, A, we've been deluged with so much crazy for so many months now that it's like, it's sort of, you're sort of numb to it.
We're becoming desensitized. Yeah.
And that because, and I scream about this all the time, that this is the base of the Republican Party and the conservative movement, that this, he is speaking for them.
Yeah.
Not all of them, granted. And some of them are horrified.
Yeah. And a lot of them are backing away from him quickly, some of them more slowly.
Right.
But
A lot of them are as vociferous against him as any Democrat.
But those people, too,
they have their own agenda.
Are irritating to me because they're not recognized. They keep saying, like, Trump doesn't represent the Republican Party. Trump's not us, never Trump. And it's like, well, your party is not made up of your party officials. Your party is made up of your voters. Mm-hmm. And your voters voted Donald Trump to be your nominee. So if you don't like your voters, I agree. I don't like your voters either. I don't like them one bit. I think they're a bunch of racist, bigoted assholes. But those are your voters.
Yeah.
So if you want to stop, catering to them, then I would think that's probably a good idea.
Well, that's the part that, you know, when, and I kind of, I don't argue, but I kind of have to remind our friend Greg a lot. He's very, very sympathetic to the never Trump Republicans.
No.
He's very diplomatic and he wants to,
he wants to bring him in.
It's pragmatic. And he's also, he sort of admires them in a way, and I get it. But at the same time,
my face right now,
it frustrates me when I hear the Rick Wilsons of the world or the Brent Bozells or Eric Erickson or Jennifer Rubin. I mean, and I hear them say Trump is so awful, he's horrible, I hope he loses badly. It's like, yeah, okay.
Where were you when this monster was being created by, you know, not pointing out how racist, I mean.
Where were you when the party was either turning a blind eye or winking at the Obama birthers?
Right, exactly.
Where were you?
That's what I was getting to, exactly. Like, where were you coming out and saying, hey, that's really racist. Of course he's an American. Don't say that. You didn't say anything. You just stayed quiet and said, oh, ha, ha, ha.
Or what about Indiana and North Carolina's awful LGBT
laws? HB2. Or what about, I mean, you guys created this monster.
Yeah.
Either through your silence, definitely through your silence, your inaction, or your winking at these people and saying, we are your party. Trump went, okay, great. This is my party and here's my people. And then they went, oh, no, you can't say, wait. We want your vote, but that's, whoa. And you're like, well, yeah, that's what you get.
You're going to turn off all the moderates who we can kind of play these both sides, wink at the horrible, extreme, homophobe, racist, Sexist. Out of control people, but bring in some moderate types and the fiscal conservatives, and we have this nice...
Because we're not going to tax you as much, and don't worry about big government.
Right.
Freedom. Guns.
Right, and a very select few of them do acknowledge that and say, you know what, we catered to these crazy people for too long and this is what we deserve, but most of them just don't even talk about it.
Right. So, they just talk about Trump as though he's some phenomenon that happened and they don't know why. Raising my hand, I can tell you, come talk to me, I know why. I get it. over here. Let me tell you all about what happened. I've been watching it happen.
Well, they don't want
my lifetime.
They don't want to hear that.
They don't, and they don't want to admit it. They don't want to acknowledge their role in the dog whistling and all the things that led to Trump being able to just say out loud and have David Duke endorse him and decide to run for Senate, because why not? Because Donald Trump's running, so why can't the KKK have a seat in Senate? Like, why not? And at this point, it's like, yeah, well, good point. If there's enough people in that state that are Trump supporters, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you know.
No, there's not enough of them that will show up to a Trump rally and then admit that they are that extreme, even though they are clearly that extreme.
Right.
But see, this is what I predict, is that as the polls get worse and worse and you know, it's not going to get better. It's just going to get crazier. And at a certain point, Trump, and I think this is happening already, Trump's going to show up. He's going to know he's got no chance of winning. So why is he even bothering? Because he can feed off the energy of a rabid, crazy crowd.
That's right.
And so,
and he's a narcissist.
I was going to save this for the second half, but like things tonight, like in Pennsylvania, he says the only way I lose Pennsylvania is if there's massive cheating and fraud.
Right.
So you guys all have to patrol the polls, and it, like those people are really going to go into black neighborhoods. Yeah. Right. Ugh. But I mean, like
with guns, maybe.
Yeah. No. He lowered that gauntlet tonight and said the only way he's losing Pennsylvania latest polls by about 10.
Yeah.
And he's saying the only way I lose is if there's massive cheating.
There's not even been a poll dropped or a ballot dropped yet. And he's saying they're cheating. It's like cheating at what? Polling voters? That you're losing. And he was so, we were watching it and I was like, oh my God, he's done. He's just like this. He's like, so I guess we have a problem in Utah. This is Trump.
Well, this was in the front of the evangelical voters yesterday, yeah.
And I don't know. It's different in Utah, I guess. You guys, is anyone here from Utah? He just was like so low energy, so like, I guess, I don't know.
Somebody
like,
else.
Pennsylvania, maybe we'll lose that, but probably because they'll steal it from me. And you're like, what is happening?
Somebody else mentioned that today on Twitter, that they were watching the speech and said the same thing you did. And so the only thing he's got, the only reason, the only motivation to get up in the morning at this point is to get in front of these crowds of sycophants and rile them up. So the worse it gets, the more extreme he's going to have to be to rile them up.
So that he can get his little jollies out of this presidential...
Yeah. We're 87 days out and we're this close. You can't see it. I'm making this little inch thing with my fingers. We're this close to his followers going to the press pit and physically assaulting them. You had the old guy cursing and putting his middle finger in their face yesterday.
Yeah.
So sooner or later, something bad. I mean, why would we assume not? We've already seen protesters get punched.
Right.
That was already last summer.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. You know, as things get crazier and crazier, I am fearful that things are going to get really, really ugly.
Yeah.
Towards the press, towards if more protesters manage to get in.
It's so insane to think like this man... We throw around the word fascist a little bit, maybe loosely sometimes.
But yeah.
When you really think about some of the things he's said and what fascism really means.
Yeah.
He says, you know, I'm going to basically shut down the free press. I'm mm-hmm. going to sue people, is his way of putting it. Essentially shut down the free press. Then he says about Hillary and Obama, who are his political opponents, that they are traitors.
And they should be in prison.
That they should be imprisoned, that someone should shoot them.
Yeah.
That they founded a terrorist organization bent on killing Americans. I mean, mm-hmm. So political opponents should be imprisoned or murdered.
Right.
That's a pretty standard fascist thing to say.
That's pretty standard fascist thing to say. The press doesn't have a right to criticize me, and if they do, they're anti-American.
They can be the press, but they can never criticize me. Or, and then list of punishments and or, in this case, it's mostly legal, or I'll just take away their press passes. And people are like, you can't really do that as the president. Like, the press is definitely going to cover you, dude. And he's like, not if I'm president. And you're like, what does that mean? Like, that's pretty fucking fascist thing to say. Like, we're not being hyperbolic at this point.
Right.
It's like, I'm going to kill or imprison my political opponents. I'm going to shut down the free press. I'm going to make, the other one, military. So the military's... going to do whatever I say, even if it's against the Constitution.
And against the Geneva Conventions, I'm going to make them torture people.
And you literally have generals. And then people came out and said, they're not going to do it. And he's like, oh yeah, they will. You watch. Under me, they will. I'm like, that's okay. So now we have military that just does the bidding of the dictator, which is against the Constitution, which we've just thrown out, essentially. It seems hyperbolic to call him fascist, but it is literally, like, if you read the definition of what fascism is, he's just, like, play-by-play, just playbooking it. Just, like, what can I do to just... And I don't care.
Well,
propaganda?
Yeah.
The whole thing. It's just... It's crazy.
And two things that I wrestle with in my brain when I see the same things you do and have the same thoughts you do. Okay, that's why he will never win.
Right.
But B... He's going to get roughly 40% of the vote.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Hillary's going to get roughly 46 probably at the end of the day. And
I mean,
Johnson and Stein will split the other 15% or so. So, yeah.
People did not think that, like, other fascist leaders could also rise up. And to be fair, we never popularly elected any of them. Hitler did became the leader under a declared state of emergency, which I could nerd out with political theory on for an hour, which I won't do.
And he did win an election.
The state of but then he like, yes, I guess that's true, but not as a fascist.
No, they had a parliamentary system, and
right.
the Nazi parties only had about 33% when he came into power, and then they just took it over.
The coalition government, and then he declared a state of emergency, and that made the Constitution in a state of exception. We could talk about Agamben, but anyway.
Yeah, and George Lucas tried to reproduce that in his awful prequels.
Badly.
It was stupid.
Badly. Yeah. But no, there's a political theory book by Agamben called The State of Exception, which is fascinating about the declaration of states of emergency. But anyway, we all, I don't think the general public of any society has ever thought that these things would come to pass. It's always sort of been this like, of course not, right? But, and I'm not trying to be alarmist, but this man literally did win a primary and is polling, for me, dangerously close to a reasonable, sane human on a fascist platform. I just don't know what to do with
Hillary
that in my brain.
At best is only going to win by 7-8 points at best.
Right.
At best, maybe 10, but probably more like 5 or 6. Now, electorally, it won't be close because of the Electoral College.
Right. Yeah.
But you'll still have roughly less than half Americans saying we want the fascists and roughly a little more than half saying no.
Right. And the other a third of Americans who don't vote doing what? Just pissing away the future and saying, I guess I don't care. I don't like Hillary. She's a lady or politics sucks or my voice isn't like, I don't know. The other third of Americans, literally about a third of the American people that are eligible, don't vote.
Well, that's part of a democracy as well, in that they have a right to not participate. I know.
I get it, but like,
it's crazy to us, but that's the fact of the matter, right?
You have a right
freedom
to
freedom of religion also means freedom from religion.
Well, it primarily means freedom from religion, I think. But
right.
Sure, but that also, so it's exactly the same as freedom of speech for me. You're allowed to say whatever you want, but I get to call you an asshole.
Of course.
So you're allowed to not vote.
Well, people always conflate that, right?
You're allowed to not vote, but I get to call you an asshole. And I get to blame you when Trump wins because you did do nothing.
Right, when the Never Hillary people say, vote for Stein, and then we're going to bring up our local thing here in the second half where we got this email that said
we'll talk about what it said.
Oh, we managed to find these Green Party candidates, you know, running against Michael Bennett, and I'm like, what are you doing? What?
Yeah. When you have the right to do all of that.
Well, no. And see, when we say that's a bad idea, that's stupid, that doesn't make sense, they say you're trying to silence me. I'm saying no. You're saying your piece and I'm saying mine.
Yeah.
And
it's like when comedians make rape jokes. I'm allowed to call you an asshole. No one's putting you in jail for making a shitty racist or rape joke or awful, saying something awful.
Right.
Sarah Palin, I'm looking at you. When you say something stupid and I call you stupid,
and then you
that
say,
is not
see,
taking
these
away
liberals are trying to silence
your freedom
me and
of
be
speech.
Fascist.
I could put you in jail if you said something stupid. That would be taking away your freedom of speech.
Right.
Me trolling you and calling you an idiot is not taking away your freedom of speech. It's me exercising mine.
Just like you're exercising yours.
Correct.
Yeah, and thin-skinned people that don't really understand what those terms mean say that all the time.
Yeah.
And we run into that with conservatives. We run into them with the Never Hillary people.
Bernie or Bust people, with their bullshit tape on their mouths at the convention, and then we're being silenced. No, you're not. It's a you're literally living inside the democratic process, and you lost.
Yeah.
That does not mean that anything else. It means that you lost fair and square, and now your fifis are hurt, so shut the fuck up. Good. Put a tape over your mouth. I wish you'd done that 6 months ago. I wish that had been the thing that you had thought of ages ago.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break.
Yes.
And remember to direct your hate mail at reverendtestimony@gmail.com, at Irreverent Duo on Twitter, and we'll be right back. Thank you. Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. And more stuff going on. Our friend just posted a story that the RNC, our friend Sarah Burris, who's been on.
Yeah.
Oh, did I tell you the story? I didn't tell you the story. She got hit on by Martin Shkreli today.
What?
Today on Twitter.
If you don't know Martin Shkreli, he is the most vile human on earth, sort of...
self-hating closeted gay dude, clearly.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I don't know. I think he's more like, maybe, but definitely a dude bra who worked for the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, but he pours it on so thick that it's like, dude, you're compensating.
Yeah. Well, but that could be a lot of reasons. But anyway, if you don't know who he is, he's the guy who increased
the... He's the farmer bro.
The farmer bro who increased the price of medication for AIDS patients to an absurd degree and got a lot of shit and went on a bunch of talk shows and...
Well, then got arrested for...
He did.
I forget exactly.
Some insider trading stuff.
Insider trading, something like that.
Yeah.
He's out now, but he's still facing...
So what did he do to Sarah? Hey, shout out Sarah. Ow, ow.
she was riffing on him for something and he happened to catch it and say, hey, you want to go on a date?
What?
And I, me being a smart ass, chimed in. Yeah, I don't think she's your type.
Oh,
meaning that,
my.
That I think he's a closeted gay dude.
A lady. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And also, like, she doesn't hate poor people enough or something to that effect.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said something really stupid and juvenile back to me, like, yeah, you know me. I hate everything and everybody. Or,
okay.
I'm not sure if I hurt his feelings or whatever, so I was trying to goad him into... and you know, into giving something away or getting in a flame war.
I'm sorry.
Well, she turned it around and tried to be really like syrupy and sappy with him and said, you seem like you need a hug. And, I guess he got bored of it and he stopped tweeting back to us. But yeah, so me and Sarah were trying to troll Martin Shkreli today.
That's always fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. She posted-
or maybe she was really asking her on a date.
Yeah. Well, don't blame him for asking her on a date. She's amazing. So she posted a story this evening on Raw Story about how the RNC may have also been hacked by Russia.
Mm-hmm.
They released a handful of emails, which were really boring about nothing.
Well, the Russia's in it for Trump. So if they had anything damaging, they wouldn't. And I think their point would be, see, we hack everybody. And look, the RNC wasn't conspiring against anybody.
The larger point that someone made was that in her story, I think it was Huckabee, said something about, like, if they can't even maintain basic email security, how could they possibly be responsible for the security of the United States? To which we say, lol, you couldn't either. Because you also got hacked.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's much of a story. And maybe, you know, it's not Russia. Maybe it's somebody else and stuff will come out later. I don't know. But yeah.
Who cares?
Who cares?
It was a story when the DNC was coming and there were fears there was going to be a real floor fight between Bernie Sanders and Hillary.
Right.
There wasn't. There's still some Never Hillary holdouts. They're dwindling.
They're not going to make a difference. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, so, we got an email, or I got it and forwarded it to you.
Yes, and I did not get it, and another Bernie friend of mine, Kim, did not get it. And we are all in different districts in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And Dana didn't get it either. So
I did.
Talk about what you got and what the fuck.
Well, it was interesting and I wasn't sure to take it seriously at first. But it was from somebody who had reached out to me and was in communication with me before the caucus here.
Mm-hmm.
As I've said a million times, I caucused for Bernie. I was a caucus captain for Bernie.
Mm-hmm. And you were a PCP and sort of took over the caucus process. And,
yes.
Yeah,
well, absolutely. I was, and I took over for the PCP who didn't know what she was doing.
Right.
And now I am, and now I need to re-register because I moved from into another district.
Right.
But anyway, the point is this person still had me on their email list. And they reached out and said, hey, Bernie supporters, you can not only vote for Jill Stein, but you can help elect these other Green Party people that are running.
The only people that really support Bernie's platform are the following.
Yeah.
And then named some people that nobody's ever fucking heard of.
No.
That are trying to.
I'm not even sure if they're on the ballot.
I don't know if they are or not.
She wasn't asking for signatures, so.
A lot about local Colorado politics, and the people they were trying to unseat were Michael Bennett, who's mm-hmm. our current Democratic senator
yes.
in the state of Colorado, who, yes, some liberals have a hard time with, but is largely a really great senator.
Yeah.
And Morgan Carroll, who is the House of Representatives, state House rep from that district in Aurora, who I was honestly shocked. She's not Green Party. She's a Democrat. And she is one of the more liberal Democrats that you'll find in the country. If you want to support Bernie's revolution, you should vote for Morgan Carroll.
Absolutely.
And not some person I've never heard of, and try to unseat someone in our state house. By the way, Colorado's House of Representatives, the state house, we have control over by 3 seats.
Mm-hmm.
3. The Senate in Colorado is Republican controlled and is controlled by the Republicans by 1 seat. Colorado, again, is a swing state. So trying to unseat a current House member in our state House of Representatives for some green, you're giving it to the Republicans. Now we have it by 2 seats, and I was so pissed.
Now, a couple things. I was more amused than pissed, because I don't think Morgan Carroll or Michael Bennett are in any danger, but
yeah,
now we're on this, because let's all remember that Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton.
Correct. And has urged all of his supporters to vote for her.
And vote down ticket.
Uh-huh. For Democrats.
For Democrats.
Not for Green Party.
Not for Greens.
Democrats.
Another thing, now I guess you've decided that the Democratic Party is evil and you just want to be the Democratic Party.
Right. So go be a Republican.
Well, here's why it's horribly short-sighted. We know this because we live in Colorado.
Yeah.
It's a purple state, not because there's a bunch of purple people.
Right.
But because there's a lot of very blue people and a lot of really, really red blood, crazy right-wing conservative Republicans.
That's right.
So if the state house and the Senate went red here, you can expect a lot of very similar crap to North Carolina.
That's right. So exactly right. So I'm going to correct one thing you said, which is that we have very blue, we have leaning blue, we have leaning red, we have incredibly crazy, insane strong Republicans, and we have a large population of unaffiliated voters in this state, approximately 30% of the voters statewide.
Okay, that's fair. You're on the ground doing this every day.
Yeah, so approximately 30% of the voters statewide. That's not in every county, it's not in every district, but 30% of voters statewide are registered unaffiliated. Most of those people are people that are who I was when I was 18, which is I'm just going to be unaffiliated because I'm not going to have my opinions told to me. I will look at all the issues mm-hmm. and I will decide for myself.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
found myself never, ever in a million fucking years voting for R ever.
Yeah.
Once.
So you just kind of figured out that
I was like, oh, I'm a Democrat, actually. Is how that works.
Yeah.
A lot of people are that way. So my dad, famous on this show, is unaffiliated. He is not a registered Republican.
He always votes Republican.
But I don't think he's voted for a Democrat in the last 40 years.
Sure.
I don't think before that he voted.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a misnomer to say that we have 30% of the population unaffiliated, because I think most people
they just don't like having the label.
They don't like it. Because Colorado's a very independent state.
But that goes across the country too, right? You have something like 30-35% call themselves independent, but they clearly lean one way or another.
Not most states have less. Colorado's one. That's why we're a swing state. We have one of the higher populations of unaffiliated. But mm-hmm. I think that's kind of because we have this Western mindset, this idea that, like, we're not going to go along with the thing.
And we're mavericky.
We're very mavericky in Colorado. People love that
idea. Not really, but
no, they always definitely vote with whoever they always vote with, but they like this idea that they could be unaffiliated.
Sure.
So anyway.
Yeah, but it's not like Ron Paul or the Greens get any traction here.
No. We split half and half. Like, we split. And we're going definitely more blue.
Yes.
Definitely leaning more blue, except for when we don't vote.
But the point is, this person who sent me this email, who's probably 19, and I mean, I don't know.
God knows. Or like 55 and just a
because I met some of them at the caucus too, right?
Me too, yeah.
But chances are they're 19 and new to politics.
Yes.
So, which great for them for being involved, but you haven't been around long enough to know there's people like Gordon Klingenschmitt and right. Joanne Winholtz.
Right.
And you right. have no idea yeah. what uh-huh. you're suggesting
yes.
in turning over control of our state house to people like that
right.
to make a protest vote because you're mad at the DNC because some staffers were mean to Bernie
right.
or whatever.
Right.
You are playing with fire.
You're playing with napalm. This shit sticks. When you elect Republicans in Colorado, historically, really bad things happen. Back in the 90s, when Republicans had control of the state and Senate, the House and Senate in Colorado, and we had a Republican governor, they passed a law that was eventually overturned by the Supreme Court, which was an anti-gay law.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most famous ones. And it was overturned because the Supreme Court looked at it and basically said, like, you're assholes. And this is in the 90s,
yeah.
when it was totally fine to be an asshole to gay people.
Yeah.
And Colorado was such an asshole that it looks very much like North Carolina right now. Only it was in the 90s. When you allow Republicans in Colorado to control the government, the most extreme version of that's going to happen.
Well, let's talk about some of that.
Personhood wouldn't even be a ballot measure. So I was at this dinner the other night. It's a happy hour, actually, for Planned Parenthood for Hillary.
Yes.
And we were all sort of congratulating ourselves about how for the first time in three election cycles, there isn't a personhood amendment on the ballot in Colorado. And personhood yeah. is the thing where, you know, anytime basically you have a miscarriage or as soon as you have a fertilized
egg is a person,
it's a human. And
which
so,
is asinine.
I mean, it's completely absurd. And we've had one every election cycle for a long time.
And they lose.
They lose and they lose by larger and larger margins every year. And there was one that was collecting signatures and failed to get the correct number of signatures by last Thursday night. And so we don't have to fight that ballot initiative this year.
But the point is, if you had a Republican
that's right.
controlled House and Senate,
we wouldn't have a ballot initiative or signatures.
You pass
we would
a bill,
just pass the fucking bill,
and then if it's an R governor, they sign it.
Done. And now we have personhood in Colorado. It is critical.
Yeah.
That in Colorado, particularly.
Well, let's talk about some of the stuff we've heard lately, right?
Yeah.
You had Democrats in the Senate minority.
Mm-hmm.
Try to pass a bill to outlaw conversion therapy.
Right.
And conversion therapy, if you don't know, means that you can torment the gay out of kids.
Right.
And guess what? Republicans shot it down. They want conversion therapy to be legal.
Right.
So what if they had control of the state
right.
house?
Right.
Now, how
and
about
a Republican governor.
How
now,
about,
luckily, our governor's not up for election this year. Hickenlooper won in 2014.
Barely.
He won. So he's not up for yeah. re-election this year. So yeah. we still have a Republican or a Democratic governor for the next 4 years. But no, I mean, yeah, if we had a Republican House and a Republican Senate, we would be basically the situation that Obama's been in for the last 2 years, which is
nothing gets passed.
Crazy shit coming out of their mouths. Crazy bills coming to Hicks' desk.
Tabor laws.
Yeah.
Going crazy,
oh, yeah.
defunding
I mean,
all the public schools,
yep.
trying to gut Medicaid, trying
yep.
to refuse maybe federal dollars for
correct.
Medicaid. We just expanded Medicaid here and got a lot of people coverage,
yes.
which has greatly improved
yes.
health care here.
Yes, correct. We also have a ballot initiative up this year that did get approved, that the signatures, they're still counting them, but they had enough signatures to by the deadline. So then
yeah.
you have to go count the signatures and verify them. And so generally the rule is you collect 50% more than you need because the rules committee is going to throw out a bunch of signatures if they're not exactly correct. But should those signatures come in, we will have on the ballot in November something for assisted suicide in the state of
wow.
Colorado, which would be, I think, the fourth in the country,
mm-hmm.
which I'm a huge, huge passionate proponent of. Again, though, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming up and we have such tight margins. I mean, literally, we could win the Senate back if we win two seats and hold the ones we have.
We're talking about the Colorado State Senate.
Correct. Colorado State Senate. If we won two seats and held the ones we had, we would win. And in the House, we just have to keep the three that we have. Hopefully, we're hoping for like large down ballot wins
mm-hmm.
so that we can retain larger majorities in the Senate and House. But it's crazy here. I mean, it's not like other places. It's very divided. It's
yeah.
very much a purple state.
And our state reps are as crazy as any crazy state reps you
Gordon
ever
Klingenschmidt,
read about.
Man, look him up on YouTube. It is hilarious.
He's a lunatic.
It's hilariously awful.
And a fraudster and a psychopath. Yeah,
yeah. Yep.
And his buddy,
Evangelical Christian.
Joanne Winholtz, who we've talked about.
Yeah. No, she's a crazy person. I have a piece of her literature. We call it Lit. I have a fun story. I can't tell that story. Anyway, I have a piece of her literature, and she literally the first side of it, it's like a postcard kind mm-hmm. of, but bigger. And there is a bald eagle with a American flag behind it.
Mm-hmm. Holding an AR-15 and riding a Harley.
Basically, it should be faith, family values, and tradition is her motto.
Mm.
Those are just some dog whistles right there, right? And
well,
then
she doesn't even dog whistle; she just whistles.
Right, and then she goes on the back page, and it's like things I voted yes for, all of them are awful. Yeah. Things I voted no for, all of them I support. And you just look at it, and you're like, you get again come back to this idea of like, I cannot be governed by this woman.
Yeah.
The final note on her things that I voted no against, it was like repeal Obamacare, no on Medicaid expansion, no on assisted suicide, no on Obamacare, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
No. And then it was like the final one that she actually put on her literature that she paid for was no on recognition of public lands. And you're like, what?
What in is Colorado?
In Colorado, I voted no on recognition of. I hate land. What does that mean?
Where our state and national parks here are.
Our lottery
our pride.
Proceeds go to our state and national parks in Colorado. That's what our proceeds of the lottery go to. Not education, not anything else. We are fiercely proud of our state and federal parks in Colorado.
Yeah.
And on her lit, that was one of the five things she was the most proud of, is that she voted no on recognizing public lands. And I'm like, I don't even know what that means. Why? I don't even know.
Well, part of that is for fracking.
Gotcha.
Because the fracking people want to frack everywhere here. They want drills everywhere.
So she doesn't
want to
recognize
like
public land so that the oil and gas companies can come in and destroy it.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, that's even better. Great.
And it's going to be on the ballot this year. It's going to either make it so the state controls who can frack and who can't and where, or it'll be per local community, or they don't want the local communities to decide because a lot of the local governments are stepping up and saying no.
So they have been for a while, and one thing I'll say about Hickenlooper is he's really bad on fracking. So a lot of states.
So is Obama.
Yeah. But so a lot of our local communities, particularly where I'm from, up north in the Front Range, Fort Collins, Greeley, Longmont, Windsor, Loveland, those local communities voted against allowing fracking to happen. And John Hickenlooper, as the governor of Colorado, sued those localities and said that you do not have the authorization or authority, essentially, to disallow these things from happening in your own community. So there was this bill that came before the House, and it was about whether or not localities should have this authority, and it was shot down in committee. And that's a democratically controlled thing. But, you know, oil and gas is really huge money in Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
It's huge. And a lot of rural communities that allow fracking currently make a lot of money from allowing their lands to be used for oil and gas. And in this time when we are not subsidizing farms and not supporting farmers and not supporting agriculture, which is what Colorado is kind of built on, it's hard to tell these people, you have all this land, you make negative amounts of money farming it, you make a lot of money allowing oil and gas to come and use it, that you're not allowed to do that. And then people in urban areas are larger in population and have less financial incentive. And so they vote to not allow it. And these urban communities get really frustrated by that. So it's a really like the rural urban split in Colorado is really stark.
You know, I haven't seen one Trump ad. I've seen a couple of anti-Hillary super PAC ads, but I've seen a shit ton of pro fracking ads.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, on all the issues, really, the rural-urban split in Colorado is stark. And that's what is another thing that makes our state so interesting. We have Denver, which is like one of the fastest growing cities in the country. It's mm-hmm. a major urban center. We have culture, we have art, we have museums, we have everything that you would imagine a big city would have. And like 20, 30 miles away is what most people would look at as wasteland. It's just rural nothingness, just mm-hmm. flat plains and farms and nothing.
To the east, yeah.
To the east.
To the west is the Rockies.
Exactly, and to the west is the mountains. And the mountain communities have entirely different economics and entirely different value systems.
Oh, yeah.
They primarily thrive off of tourism and skiing.
Yeah.
And so we have like... It's really three different states, and we're all trying to be one state. And I think that explains more than anything why we're so purple. Mm-hmm. Why, you know, the urban centers are definitely Democratic. Diana DeGette's never going anywhere.
Yeah.
And then in the rural populations, they have crazy people like Klingenschmidt and, you know, like just Colorado Springs. And then you have the mountains, and they're largely like pretty, blue, but there's a lot of really rich people that live in Vail and Breckenridge mm-hmm. and Telluride, and those people have sort of economic interest with the Republican Party.
So sure.
It's this really interesting mix taxes. Yeah, of people that live in the same state but have really nothing in common in terms of the way they live.
Well, Grand Junction's a different world from Denver.
It is.
Yeah.
So is Vail. So is Greeley. Yeah. So is, like, you know, Erie, like it's a really interesting state.
Well, a lot of states are like that too. Pennsylvania, you know, between
sure.
between Pittsburgh and
sure.
Philadelphia's Alabama, basically, right. is what they say.
Right.
You know, so
right.
so there's right. a lot of different states right. that have that going on. Nevada's another one. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
crazy
mm-hmm.
cattle ranchers in Vegas.
Right. Exactly.
So
yeah.
we have different states. Like, but the point, getting back to the original point, is this person who sent me this email that said, "Let's kick all these Democrats out and vote for these Greens nobody's heard of." You don't know what you're doing. I'm
yeah.
sorry, but you don't.
Right.
Now, if you had been touting these candidates a year ago and what their platforms are,
2 years ago,
and what have you, mm-hmm. and they had actually gotten a ground operation going, then I'm sure I'd still disagree with you, but I'd be more apt to listen. Now it's just a tantrum. It's the temper tantrum that you threw a couple weeks ago at the DNC is continuing.
Right. Where were you in the 2014 midterms?
Oh, that is a good friggin' question.
Where were your Green candidates then?
Yeah.
Where were you on the ground game? Where you didn't knock on my door. You didn't tell me all about how much you wanted this person that I've never heard of to win.
As someone as someone in the person of you who does things like that every day.
Yeah, I do. It's so frustrating for, oh, well, I'm really pissed Bernie didn't win and I'm not done with my tantrum. So 3 months before the election, I'm going to try to unseat some Dems, basically giving those seats to Republicans. And it's like, no, no.
Yeah.
And what your response back to them, I thought was brilliant, which was like, no, I'm not in the business of helping Republicans or getting the anti-vaxxer movement on any higher of a scale than because they wanted Jill Stein. And so please take me off this list immediately. And then I forwarded it to some people who forwarded it to some people to get it to the hands of Morgan Carroll and Michael Bennett's campaign to say, hey, P.S., just so you know,
yeah,
I don't know that it matters, it, but it, just as long as you know this is happening.
It's probably a circle jerk of 15 people,
right.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
But
we don't know who it went to. It's BCC kind of deal. But
right.
Yeah, but like just to be aware, you know, this is the nonsense happening in our local community right now. So.
But they are a vast minority here because the
yes.
polling is,
yeah.
is getting wider and wider.
I think the last polling was like Colorado, Hillary's up 14 over Trump.
And Bennett's up 15.
Yeah.
I don't think the spreads will be that wide, but they'll be wide enough.
I think Bennett will win.
Yeah.
We had a conversation with
Bennett's fairly popular.
Cortland Coffey when he was on last about some of the progressives' problem with Michael Bennett, and particularly in terms of fracking and a couple mm-hmm. of other things. But I don't know. I saw him speak with Cory Booker, and I listened to what he had to say, and, you know, I've never had a problem with Michael Bennett.
Well, it's a continuum. There's people who have been around a little bit longer, like us. We're still young, but mm-hmm. we've been around a little mm-hmm. bit longer. To kind
I remember
of understand,
when he was appointed, when Ken Salazar was ripped out to go to the...
But my point is,
yeah.
we look at our politicians on a continuum.
Yes.
We can find a handful of things we don't like about Obama
mm-hmm.
and understand that he damn well needs to be president.
right?
Rather than a Mitt Romney or throwing away our vote on a protest.
Right. Absolutely.
It's, you know, the way the world works.
It's the greater good.
Now, would I be more open-minded if you found a third-party candidate who actually hit on a lot of right buttons and wasn't an anti-vaxxer and didn't appoint a lunatic as their running mate and had some actual factual ideas about some things? Maybe, but it's not what you're doing.
I wouldn't.
You're showing me Gary Johnson.
I wouldn't.
And
the reason why is that I'm a Democrat, and I also believe in that awful pragmatism thing and working from within the system. And I also understand how the Electoral College works. Yeah. And so until those things are fixed, I'm not going to throw my vote away on someone who's going to, and I know, I hear you out there already yelling at me because I hear it all day long. You don't owe your vote to anybody, but you are wasting your vote if you vote for someone that cannot be president. And don't talk to me about how, well, if they get 15%, then they get to be in the next debate, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. The future of the next 4 years and next 8 years and the future of this country is more important than your insistence that some dude who didn't exist before 5 months ago get to be on the debate stage with Hillary Clinton. I that's not important to me. What's important to me is that Donald Trump's not the president. So if you want, here's what I'd say. If you're serious about this and you hate the Democrats and you hate the Republicans and you want me to listen to you, then what I want you to do is January 21st of 2017, I want you to start a political party. I want you to start a ground game. I want you to start from the grassroots. I want you to get people excited. I want you to find qualified candidates who are not anti-vaxxers, who are not nobodies, who are not crazy people. I want you to start running them in city councils and running them for state houses. I want you to get together funding. I want you to get together donors. I want you to get together an infrastructure in which the in 2018, in the midterms, you can start running city councilors and mayors and local house races and get this new party that you've developed going and get those people some public, get them elected and then get them funding and be serious about it and be serious every day from today until the 2020 elections in which you say to me, look what I've done. Look at the grassroots support that I have. Look at the fundraising that I have.
Look at the viable candidates who aren't crazy.
Look at the candidates who aren't crazy that I have. I want to be a part of this. And I will be like, fuck yes, let's do this. Let's reform the Electoral College. Let's make it a three-party system. Way to go. It might also take you 8 years. But if you're serious about unseating Democrats in this election and putting Donald Trump in office because you're having a tantrum, I don't want to talk to you.
Well, that's the thing, though. How many of these people, I mean, Sean King didn't even make it to the election. His tantrum's over.
Yeah, no, he's supporting Hillary now.
But
yeah,
how many, like our friend who sent us the email.
Yeah.
Do you actually think on January 21st, 2017, that that person is going to do any of what you said?
I don't think on November 9th that person's going to do anything I said. I don't think on...
Prove us wrong.
Prove us
wrong.
Please, I swear to God, prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Start a party. Start a movement.
Or join something up with the Greens.
They kind of exist. They kind of exist. Make them viable. Don't make them viable in 2020. Make them viable in 2017 and 2018 and 2019 and 2020, and I will listen to you. But until then, if you show up 3 months before election in 2020 yelling and screaming about the Green Party, I'm going to tell you the same thing I'm going to tell you right now, which is go fuck yourself. I don't want to hear you. I don't give a shit. You don't matter. You're not engaged. You're not part of the political process. You don't actually care. You're just having hurt
feelings.
You've
cared for a couple months, which is great, which is better than not caring at all. But some of us have been busting our ass for quite a long time or supporting people who have been busting their ass
every month
for
every
a really long time.
Off years, non-election years, midterms, all the things.
And staring down the monsters like Klingenschmitt and Winholz and the like.
Yeah.
And keeping your right to control your body and your right not to have a fracking in your backyard and your right not to have conversion therapy if you're gay.
And your right to not have crazy people run your school board that are going to take away civil rights education and slavery education because it makes people look bad. Like, there's people on the ground that knock doors and do things every day when you're off jerking off and talking about whatever. And then election year comes around and you're like, I don't like Hillary, though. Boo. I'm going to unseat some Democrats. And we all just give you the middle finger because it's like, okay, well, I want to talk to you. Literally, I want to talk to you in January of 2017. Let's talk then. And you tell me what you're going to do. And if you do it, I will absolutely be on board. I will come help you. But I say that because I know you're not going to do it.
Well,
so prove me wrong.
And right now you literally have nothing.
Yeah.
You have nothing. You have nothing but a protest sign.
Uh-huh. And you're going to maybe take some votes away from Hillary. And okay, cool.
And maybe some of our local Democrats.
And maybe unseat some really amazing progressive Democrats in some areas that really, really need them, because they're largely, like, Morgan Carroll represents largely people of color and lower income people, mm-hmm. and people with shitty schools, and she is doing tremendous things to help them, and she's amazing. You unseat her with some nobody that I've never heard of from the Green Party, and I don't know what they stand for. And actually, that person's not going to win. It's going to be the shitty asshole Republican who is like a Donald Trump supporter. So great job there. Let's unseat Morgan Carroll so that some Trump version 2.0, but locally, can be in that seat representing people of color.
But
like,
that's
fuck you. Stop.
That's the only realistic outcome they would want. So then they could turn around and say, it's your fault for being in bed with the establishment, and look what you did.
I hate them. They're almost worse than Trump supporters at this point. I swear to God, because you're not even principled. You don't care. You don't care what happens to these people. You don't care what happens to this country. You don't care about progressive values. You care about beating the guy who beat you. And that's not a progressive value. That's not helping people. That's not anything. That's just you getting revenge. And revenge is not the name of the game in politics. The name of the game for me in politics is helping people. So, fuck you. You're as bad as they are. That's all I have to say about that.
I can't top that. I don't know if I can even follow that.
Yeah, sorry. I just get so mad. But anyway.
That was beautiful.
Thanks. All right, guys. It's just been so crazy around here. What do we have coming up?
Well, we got about 15 minutes. So a series of polls came out today from Marist, Wall Street Journal, NBC. They were wildly, wildly good for Clinton, bad for Trump.
Were they pretty consistent across the board?
Consistent in that I don't think the margins will be anything this close.
But they all kind of followed the same.
Well, they showed, they showed Hillary up 5 or 6 in Florida, up 9 in North Carolina, up 13 in Colorado.
I heard that.
And up 9 or 10 in Virginia. Now, before you get too excited about those, I'm pretty sure the same outfit released a raft of polls around this time in 2012 that showed Obama up like 7 in Ohio, 9 in Florida, and 8 in Virginia.
Okay.
And the, Florida, he won by like less than a point. Ohio, he won by like 2 or 3. Right. Virginia, he won by like 4 or 3. So I believe she's probably winning in all these states, but I think those results are a little whacked out. I think what might be happening now.
Well, he had such a bad 2 weeks. We have to probably consider that.
No, he did have a terrible 2 weeks, granted. But I think what's happening in a lot of these state polls, and not happening as much in the national polls, is there's this new polling phenomenon that people like Tom Jensen of PPP are just sort of kind of wrapping their brains around. And Nate Silver believes in it less, but he's starting to consider it a little bit too. And if your candidate is having a bad, bad week, you are less likely, if you look at the caller ID and you see it's a polling firm, to want to pick up the phone.
Yeah.
And it doesn't affect everybody, but it has enough of an effect that things can be skewed. And they believe...
That's interesting. If you, I would be more likely. Because I don't want to be like, I'm still with her.
Well,
but I'm
you would, but think about how people are. Think about when your team is not, your football team's not doing well.
You don't want to talk
you're
about
less
it.
Light, you don't want to talk about it. You don't even want to watch them play the next game sometimes. Right? As a Miami Dolphins fan, I can explore this all too well.
That's true. Okay. I didn't know that. Okay.
I still watch, but it's painful. Anyway, the point is, there is some belief that that kind of happens and that kind of makes sense. Now, unfortunately, it's impossible to quantify. You don't know if the number you called and didn't pick up was someone who was going to call, who would normally pick up the phone and say, "Yeah, I'm for Trump." There's just no way to know that.
Right.
Now, it's.
I guess that makes sense if you're like, "Yeah, I'm for Trump," and they're like, "What?" They don't want to be questioned. Like, "What about all that shit he said?" And they're like,
Maybe.
Professionals can't even explain.
Yeah,
what
they're
said,
not really supposed to do that unless it's a push pull.
But people don't know that, right?
Sure, but yeah. But going back to 2012, the reason that there's a theory behind this is when they look at the polling in 2012. And after the first debate where Obama really didn't do so hot and he seemed really disinterested.
Yeah, yes.
And Romney actually did a really good job.
I was really pissed. Yeah. I remember very clearly.
Everybody was pissed. And the next couple weeks, the polls seemed to really tighten.
Yeah.
And like it was like neck and neck and maybe Romney was leading a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it kind of leveled out. And a lot of the pollsters are like, yeah, I don't think a bunch of these Obama supporters turned around and said now they're voting for Romney.
Right.
I think they think what happened was what I just said. Like a good number of them stopped maybe picking up the phone for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So
I became disengaged. I know. That's actually a good point. I was so upset by the first debate with Obama Romney that I was like going to just like inject him with some caffeine and some like hope and change.
He woke
just
up.
Like
I don't know what was going on with him.
I don't
that
know
night.
Either. Like something happened. He and Michelle got in a fight or like. I
or
don't
maybe
know.
He was like thinking, mid like, do I want to do this another 4 years? I don't know. That's almost right? what you thought.
I don't know. I didn't.
But
I
he woke
thought,
up.
Like,
he woke up and he won the next two debates.
Yeah, I
and
mean,
everything was
obviously.
Fine. But
don't even get me started about how much I love Obama. But
no, that was a pitiful debate performance.
Yeah, that was the worst.
Like
of his whole career.
I remember he wrapped it up. He was like, "I kind of hope I get your vote," and his voice kind of tailed off, and he put his head down, and it was like,
"What the? Who are you?
What happening?"
Is I remember I was watching it with Dana and Don, and we were like. What happened? Who is Pod People? What did they do with my president? What was that? They've like, it's like that movie when like Jeff Bridges or somebody's the pretend president. And we were
yeah,
like, there's
yeah.
a conspiracy.
Yeah.
They've replaced him with some dude. Where the fuck
is
Obama?
And Chris Matthews, whether you love him or hate him, had that exact reaction. He was like, who the fuck is this guy?
Who
what was that?
Is, what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
which happens. Like I've been rewatching The West Wing, which is a thing it's sort of a misnomer. I watch it all the time over and over on repeat. But I'm at that point where like, you know, it's the season where like, it's Bartlett's second election and he's doing this debate and they only do one because it's TV and it's amazing.
Yeah.
But they're like, man, if Uncle Fluffy shows up, we're going to lose this election.
Mm-hmm.
But if the president shows up, we're going to win. And then it's the most amazing television 5 minutes in history. But
anyway,
yeah. But yeah, like the Uncle point, Fluffy showed up at that first debate for Obama and it was like.
The point what? Is the Dems had a really good convention and Trump has had a couple bad weeks and maybe for a lot of Trump supporters maybe they're just not picking up the phones.
Yeah.
At least in the state polls. That could be it. But that's not going to account for huge percentages of people.
It's a combination of the DNC and him having a couple of bad weeks as kind of the same thing because I think the DNC, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, really threw him because we stole their thunder.
Sure.
We were screaming USA, USA, and listening to this army general action figure guy yelling about how amazing America was.
How dare you say America sucks, America's great.
Yeah, and I think, I was talking to my dad about this a little bit recently, and he was saying, like, you know, of course he's going to vote for Trump and he's a Republican, but he was saying, like, you know, you guys just sort of were stealing the thing that we do. And like,
yeah, everybody's saying that.
But even my dad, he was like, it seemed really false, though, for you guys. And I was like, why did it seem false for you? I was like, it seemed to me like your convention said everything about our country sucks. And our convention said we're doing really great and we're a really great country. And isn't that what you're always telling me? Like, isn't Obama, wasn't he the great apologist for the U.S.? He just mm-hmm. went on an apology tour. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So isn't Trump kind of doing that? Isn't he going on an apology tour? To which my dad did not. Like that at all. At all. He was like, he's not apologizing, he's just pointing out. And I was like, cool, so America sucks, is that what your party stands for now? America's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I just, you know, like just the vein in the forehead. Yeah. Kind of thing. That combined with then like the great 17,000 gaffes that happened after that, I think probably a lot of those are as a result of the DNC being so pro-America and positive that Trump just like can't, he doesn't know what to do with that. So he just says crazy bullshit.
Well, like we were saying, you know, before, I think we're getting to that point in the campaign now where the only reason Trump is getting up in the morning is for these rallies with the sycophants and to keep the sycophants engaged.
Right.
And that's why they keep saying, like, people are still saying, well, he could still pivot. He could still sound like a normal candidate. So that's not what these people want. They want fire and brimstone, and Obama is the founder of ISIS, and
they love it.
The black people are going to steal the election, and Alex Jones, and all the things.
Yeah, that's they love it.
Yeah, so it's going to get crazier and crazier and crazier.
He can't pivot because Republicans hate him. Liberals, moderates, nobody likes him except the crazy people that liked him from the beginning, and they don't want to hear him pivot. So if he pivots, he gets zero. Adoring crowds.
Well, even if he thought I could do this pivot thing and do better in the polls and actually maybe have a chance,
people aren't going to be like screaming and yelling my name and saying awful things.
And cursing at the press who's mean to me.
Right.
He's getting off on this stuff.
Yes.
So even if he's going to lose, he can spend the next 3 months with these adoring crowds, you know, eating up his shtick.
Yeah, and he even said today. This is a good point to talk about this. He said today, he said, you know what? It doesn't really matter. If I lose, I go back to a really great life.
I think it was yesterday.
Was it? Yeah. Well, this week, right? If I lose, whatever. It's fine. I'll just go back to my great life with my yachts and my mansions.
Because I'm a winner no matter what. Right. And I'm great. Exactly, and right. I'm wonderful.
So he's already doing the thing where he's making excuses for if he loses, it doesn't matter.
If he loses, first of all, it was stolen and it was cheating and it doesn't matter.
And I still have a great life and I'm still a winner and fuck you. So like he's preparing for the loss.
It's like when you're in third grade and you beat somebody, you're beating somebody in checkers and they just go, well, you're a poopy head. And I'm cool anyway.
I was going to win this, but I don't care anymore.
I don't even care anymore.
I quit. I don't want to play this game. I hate checkers, by the way. Checkers is the stupidest game ever, and you're a loser for wanting to play it.
Yeah.
That's Trump.
He's a third grader.
Yeah. He's saying like...
And you cheated anyway.
First of all, you cheated. Second of all, checkers is fucking stupid. And third of all, I can totally go over there and play this much awesomer game, which has nothing to do with checkers, and you won't even be there.
Yeah.
Which is my life on a yacht and a mansion. So Trump knows, I think. And then watching his speech today about Pennsylvania and Utah was like, oh, he's done. Yeah. He knows.
Yeah. So that's going to do it for us. Again, hate mail, irreverenttestimony @gmail.com. Twitter.
We'll be getting some.
@irreverentduo.
Yeah.
And real briefly, what do we got coming up that's interesting?
Well, we're going to go watch the meteor shower because it's Friday night and it's happening. So
a week from tonight, we will be podcasting live from the Young Democrats get together.
Young Jeffco Democrats, which is my county, Jefferson County.
So check our YouTube channel. Look up YouTube Irreverent Testimony. And it's going to be around 7 o'clock Mountain Time, which is 9 Eastern. We'll get you more information.
Specific. Yeah, we'll post it hopefully with this podcast. But yeah. Listen to that, and we'll then post that live coverage as probably a special podcast as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
So thanks again. I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
Stay active. Stay tuned. Stay involved. Adios.
Since the first time I saw